Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, the men's Final Four in Phoenix, or more specifically Glendale, Arizona, coming up this weekend, but there's a whole bunch of festivities going on in front of the Final Four and during the Final Four. We'll be all over it. Men's and women's tournaments. Ryan Svensson operates a company known as Pure Focus Sports. They dabble in representation of college coaches and basketball coaches and do a whole bunch of events. He's on site in the Final Four footprint. Going to talk to us a little bit about the coaching carousel and what's the scene there. I know the games haven't started, Ryan, but what is the scene there?
Yeah, you know, John, it's actually a day early. So most of the college coaches roll in Wednesday night, Thursday morning, typically. The big National Basketball Coaches Association convention starts tomorrow morning. And so that's kind of, Thursday's kind of the day where it all starts rolling. And then usually you get fans that start rolling in Thursday and Friday too. And it's a cool scene. I'll say this, you know, Phoenix is great. Weather's great. Everything's kind of spread out. So the best Final Four spots, if you're just a lay person wanting to go, probably New Orleans, San Antonio, and India are probably my three favorite spots because you can walk to everything, you know.
Give us an idea, Ryan. On the coaching convention front, most of us have never attended a coaching convention. I've walked through it while the Final Four is going on. Give us an idea of what all these coaches are doing and talking about and thinking about as the Final Four that doesn't include most of them goes on.
Yeah. So, you know, for young coaches, it's a kind of a networking opportunity. And so, you know, you walk into the big pavilion and there's all sorts of vendor booths, you know, I mean, all sorts of different technology, software stuff, you know, equipment. I mean, you name it, it's there, tournaments that are out of the country and, you know, trying to recruit teams, they'll be there trying to recruit teams. And then, you know, it's really a networking deal for young coaches that are trying to, you know, maybe get a new job or break into the college ranks. And, you know, you'll see, like, tomorrow I can tell you that David Riley will be the most popular coach at the convention. Some of these guys that just got hired and just got a new job, you know, they'll be beating people away that are trying to, you know, get in their ear for a couple minutes and give them a resume and that kind of thing, because that's real stuff happens is at the convention. So, and then there's also a clinic. So in the convention hall, they'll have a court. Connor Sports will have a court set up. And I mean, I've heard, you know, Greg Popovich talk at these clinics in the past, and you name it, they get really high profile coaches that come and volunteer their time to share with college and high school coaches that are there in attendance. So if you're a basketball fan and you just love the game, it's a pretty cool atmosphere and environment.
One of the things I've noticed is you get a lot of athletic directors who are maybe looking for a coach now or might be looking for a coach in a year who we'll be at the coach's hotel, meeting with people, talking with people. You know, what role will your company play in that regard as you move to represent some coaches?
Yeah, so, you know, our client base is basically, you know, Division I assistants and then head coaches at lower levels that we think would have an opportunity to potentially be D1 coaches down the road. And yeah, so a lot of that is you know, the networking piece of either introducing them to you know, sometimes it's not even always the athletic director, John. It might be the assistant AD that is going to be the assistant AD at Oregon that's going to turn into the AD at Santa Clara or, you know, Grand Canyon or, you know, just like college coaches, you know, basketball coaches, they're looking for that next job too. So, you know, just really trying to network myself and then also our clients and get them in front of as many of those people that are in decision-making positions in different, you know, athletic offices around the country. And yeah, you're right, there will be a lot of admin types there too, trying to, you know, get their list together for if they ever had an opening or if they got any job, who might they be looking at. And It's a great, there's no better networking opportunity in modern day than the Final Four.
David Riley, you mentioned him. He's the new head coach at Washington State. Let's talk a little bit about David. Who is Washington State getting as a coach?
Yeah, David is a guy I've known for quite a while, and he's, the first thing is David is really, really smart. I mean, he's off the charts intelligent, and has worked for some really good coaches and has had a lot of success as an assistant coach. And then, when he took over at Eastern Washington when Shante left, has had a lot of success and carried on the things that Shante got started there. So, I think you're getting a guy that's really intelligent, a great offensive mind. It seems that Eastern Washington, play a really fast pace. And, when Shante left, he took a lot of guys with him. It was not, he didn't leave like a loaded roster for David, and David came in and fought outside the box, has a lot of international connections and brought in a lot of foreign players and, was selective in the portal and has done a great job. I mean, their best player this year started as his college career at Willamette University. So he's really been, creative in how he's put together his roster, and I think he's going to have to do that again at Washington State. So, in the old days of college basketball, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, that's probably a jump from the Big Sky to the Pac-12 is probably not one you would have seen. But given the current situation and where Washington State at, I think David's a good hire. I told you when I was on a couple weeks ago that I thought Jim Chaw was the best choice, but and I still think that, but I think David will do a really good job there, and he'll put together a good staff, and I don't know if he'll save the current roster guys that are in the portal, but I think he'll replace them with guys that can play, and Washington State will remain competitive.
Ryan Svensson with us. He is in Arizona, where the men's Final Four will take place. Ryan, the Jim Chaw thing, Washington State kind of moved quickly beyond him. Do you have a sense of why they were not interested in Chaw, or what might have happened there?
Yeah, I really haven't heard. I haven't had a chance. I haven't seen Jim. I imagine I'll run into him down here. I think kind of a variety of factors. Sometimes when you've been an assistant your entire career, you sometimes get that label of, hey, he's a great assistant. And sometimes for admin that can be hard to get past. Jim's got to be in his 60s too, so I'm thinking that his age probably didn't help him. I'm sure at a certain point the Washington State administration is looking at, kind of what they're facing in the next year or two, the uncertainty, and thinking, hey, we need a younger person with more energy to kind of bridge that gap for us. And Jim's personality is he's kind of a peculiar guy, great guy, smart guy, and a really good coach. But I could see maybe the worry that, hey, Jim's not going to win the press conference. Which sometimes I think administrators get too caught up in that. So at the end of the day, sometimes he's just not the right fit. And I have no doubt Jim's going to land on his feet and have his choice of, really high-level assistant jobs here in the near future.
And that was really interesting, too, because some Washington fans were kind of hoping that Chaw would not get hired by Washington State. And, Danny Sprinkles could add him to the Washington staff, maybe. Just weird how it works. Eric Revenoe leaving Oregon State, going to Stanford. I saw that as a no-brainer move. I mean, Oregon State is going to play a WCC schedule. Rev is getting to go home. Kyle Smith adding Revenoe, a guy with some ACC experience. That just makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It checks a lot of boxes. I mean, first of all, Rev's a great post coach. And Stanford has traditionally had, quality big guys. And so having a guy that, can coach that position and has had a lot of success helping big kids get better throughout his career, on the court will have immediate impact. And then, just obviously with Rev's experience, and being in the ACC at Georgia Tech, and, being on the West Coast at a couple different stops, it's a no-brainer for both sides, I think. And I think he'll do a great job there. He's a great fit at Stanford.
I also am looking at the, and this applies to both the men's and women's programs. What do you sell, Ryan, if you're Scott Ruick at Oregon State or Wayne Tinkle at Oregon State or either of the Washington State coaches on the men's and women's side? What are you saying to your roster to hold them in place with the portal open right now?
That's a great question. I've actually been sitting here today kind of thinking that thought as I see the Oregon State kids on both men's and women's programs jumping into the portal. And, it's a tough sell. And I feel, I think both Scott and Wayne are just off the charts people and good coaches and, you know, great representatives of Oregon State and, you know, the athletic program. Whether they've won enough games or not, that's besides the point. They've done it the right way. And to see those two and, you know, and then Washington State as well, you know, handcuffed so severely with the situation, I think the administration put them in a real tough spot with, like, what's the plan? I get that there's uncertainty and, hey, we're kind of waiting to see what happens and is this lawsuit going to benefit us? And to me, if I'm the coach of one of those programs, I want to know what we're going to be and who we're going to be, and then we can sell that. And I think more than anything, you know, the biggest thing is the NIL collective Oregon State just not equipped to be competitive with other Power Six programs. I mean, that's the reality. But then that uncertainty, like, it's hard to sell uncertainty to kids these days. You know, they want to know. And, who are we going to play? What league are we going to be in? And how do I fit? You know, you're really not able, neither one of those guys can really sell that plan, that vision, that 3, 4, 5-year vision to families. And that's got to be a real tough spot to be in.
Can you handicap the Final Four for us? I mean, look at, you know, UConn, Purdue, obviously, and certainly, you know, everybody's looking at UConn thinking that, you know, that is the team to beat. And on the other side of the equation, you've got Alabama and NC State that people are going, it's cool that they're there. Do you see a UConn-Purdue final, or could we get a surprise?
No, I think that's what we're going to see. I mean, I think, you know, college basketball is different than the NBA in that they still play through the post. And so, you know, Purdue, I mean, what Zach Edey did last week in that Elite Eight game, you know, against Tennessee was just remarkable. And I don't see them, somebody being able to stop him and enough to beat Purdue this, you know, on Saturday. And then UConn, I mean, they are playing at such a level. I don't know that UConn's on the list of, like, greatest college teams of all time, but I think modern day, when you think about their run and just how dominating they've been here in the first four games, I mean, I saw a statistic that they've trailed for less than 30 seconds in four games. I mean, that's, like, unheard of. I mean, at some point you'd lose the tip and the other team would score, and, you know, maybe you miss your first couple of shots and you're behind, you know, 4-2 after a couple of minutes. Like, they've come out hot and they've just put teams away. And I really can't see anybody beating them unless they, you know, get unbelievable foul trouble or injuries. I mean, they're the best offensive team. They're the best defensive team. They have the most depth. They've got all the pieces, and I don't even know that it's going to be real competitive in either one of their games. But, I mean, if I was a betting person, I'd bet an awful lot of money on UConn to be cutting down the nets on Monday night.
What are they doing? What, you know, give us the secret sauce at UConn, because it's not like he didn't lose players last year after winning a championship. He lost a ton of players, and he had to replenish. What's happening there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's really, really good, obviously, and their ability to run their offense with they are so hard to guard, and they've obviously got really talented and really skilled players, but their pace in the half court offense especially, and they'll play fast in the full court, but if you force them into a half court game, I mean, they just grind and wear you out. But just the constant player and ball movement is not as good as I've ever seen. You know, so much of modern basketball is isolation and ball screen, and, you know, guys, a lot of one-on-one basketball, and they don't play that way a lot. I mean, their player and ball movement is unbelievable, and it's really fun to watch. So I think offensively, that's the biggest thing, is they're so hard to guard just because of that constant movement. It just puts so much pressure on you and wears you down when you're trying to guard that for 25, 30 seconds. And then defensively, they really get after it. I mean, they do a good job of funneling everything to the big guy. You know, he's an elite shot blocker, but I tell you what, it'll be very interesting to see if one of the, you know, traditional blue bloods that play in a bigger conference and maybe have some more financial resources, don't throw a boatload of cash at Danny Hurley, because he's really, really good. I mean, he's quickly turned into, you know, the top of that elite list of college basketball coaches that can kind of write his own play.
Yeah, I think, you know, given his dad's history with sort of the miracle of St. Anthony and, you know, he might be happy. He might just be happy being at a place that, you know, he feels appreciated and has what he needs, obviously, to win. We're talking to Ryan Svensson, owner of Pure Focus Sports. He is in Phoenix area, Glendale, for the men's Final Four. You mentioned the company that builds the floors for the NCAA tournament. What a wild story that we had in Portland with the three-point line not being right. And, Ryan, we had yesterday on the show the attorney who noticed that the three-point lines weren't right. He came on the show. He talked about he was in the 300 level at Moda Center. He looked down and he was like, is anybody else noticing this? And, like, how crazy is that in your mind as a coach and a guy who's been around basketball that the lines weren't identical?
It's baffling, like completely baffling. And, you know, I saw a tweet or something on Sunday about it, and immediately, you know, I'm watching the game, and I mean, immediately you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that's way off. Like, it's not even close. I mean, it wasn't like an inch. I mean, it was what, like 7, 8, 9 inches?
Nine inches at the apex. Yeah.
Like, how did they play? Right? How did they play Friday, Saturday, all those games? And nobody caught it. Like, it was so blatantly obvious. And maybe it made it easier because somebody had said, oh, hey, the line's off. But, geez, I paused it. I showed my wife. I said, she doesn't know anything about basketball. And she's looking at it and going, oh, yeah, that's not right. So that I have never – I mean, I've done this 25 years, been around basketball and sports my whole life. I can't think of a crazier story. And so what Connor Sports is, and I'll see their booth tomorrow, what they do as both the men and the women's Final Four – it's like, you know, guys collect them, coaches collect them. You go to the convention, you go to their booth, and they have a little piece of floorboard that they give you as sort of a souvenir. It'll have the logo of, you know, this year's Final Four on it. And, you know, sometimes guys take them and get them autographed or give them to their kids or whatever. And it's kind of a memento and a keepsake. So I'm kind of curious to see what the reaction to the Connor Sports booth is this week here down in Phoenix.
I kind of wonder if they have one fewer employee, you know, like, because – apparently it was done in their factory and then, you know, it was shipped that way. But from a coaching perspective,
they,
you know,
make those courts, they're back in the Midwest somewhere, right? Michigan or Wisconsin.
Michigan.
Or
yeah, Michigan. Where, yeah.
I mean, so they, you know, they design it, they build it. And then before it leaves their factory, they have a huge warehouse. So they actually lay it out like it's going to look, you know, at the Final Four or at the Elite Eight or wherever. And how they didn't catch it when it was all put together, I'm just like, I mean, it was so bad, so bad. Like, I just almost, you're speechless. It's so bad.
How do you think that would change the game? Because on one end, it was 9 inches shorter at the apex only. The sides were right, but at the top of the key, it was 9 inches shorter. That affects spacing. That affects a lot of things that we don't think about. But how do you think that could negatively impact, like, a game you were coaching?
You know, I really don't think it impacted the game a whole lot. You know, I think if it had been further back, obviously that would have been a bigger impact, and not just from a, you know, shooting it from further distance, you know, piece, but a lot of offenses are set up based on, you know, the 3-point line. And so what you find, you know, we run events at the Moda Center for high school teams every year. And what you find with high school teams is their offenses are negatively impacted because they set up based on the 3-point line. And when we run our events, we don't put a high school arc down. It's just the NBA line. And so you're setting up way, you know, way back from where you normally would. So I know it's, you know, it's embarrassing and it's like, geez, and what's going on. But as far as an impact on the actual game, I think it's minor. You know, I guess the advantage maybe would have been if the game had gone to overtime, and then how do you determine who gets to have the shorter arc for, you know, that extra 5 minutes? That might have been a deal breaker, but I don't really think from a coaching perspective and a player perspective, I think it's pretty minimal impact, to be honest.
Ryan, have a great time at the Final Four. Love to download with you afterwards, see kind of what the scuttlebutt is, and good luck to you, man.
Absolutely, John. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
There's Ryan Svensson. He will be there on the scene at the Final Four and the coaching convention and everything that goes along with it. Anna's popping into the studio. We'll play some Punch It audio coming up. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.